Spiked Up, episode 5. Darren, we've made it to episode 5. We haven't been canceled yet. Day 9031 of quarantine, and I brought some special guests along. It was my turn to get some guests, so I got our good friends, Dukes and Bell, who have been great supporters of us, good friends of ours. I don't know that we'd be where we are without these guys, and I figured we could laugh and have some fun today, because when we're all together, that's what we do.
Right on, man. Thanks for having us. Thanks. And Carl, if anything else, I hope this leads to, at some point, us, hammering the golden spike.
We've been trying to lobby for that for the last 2 years. And Darren, every time we bring it up to Darren, Darren's like, yeah, I got you.
Yeah, I thought you were on the list. Yeah, we're working on that.
On the list.
Hey, Mike, you know me and how much I love you. I would not forgive myself if I didn't start with this. If I was wondering how Dusty Rhodes is dealing with quarantine.
Let me tell you something, Kyle Dukes, Darren Eels, who, by the way, one of my favorite Englishmen. He's him and Sir Oliver Humperdinck are two of my favorite Englishmen out there. But it's hard time, man. These are hard times. But I do appreciate, and I don't want to jump the gun, but you guys sent us over for us doing this podcast. We always look for remuneration, Carl, and we got it today from Atlanta United and the Five Stripes Daddy.
Yeah, I could do this all day. How is George O'Leary? How did George O'Leary like the Michael Jordan podcast?
Hey, Carl, you believe this stuff? Now I'm going to be like Mikey the dog's face boy. They got to have me jumping through hoops, these stupid voices, crying out loud. Like, what am I? I come to do a podcast about soccer. I'm friggin' Rich Little over here. Darren doesn't even know who George O'Leary is. Man.
No, Darren's like, who the hell is he?
I feel the reference.
How is quarantine for you guys, though? For all, I mean, you, Carl, I know you have kids, and Darren and I have talked about having kids in quarantine. Mike, he's living the good life. He's just got the wife and the great view and everything. But how has it been for you guys?
Different. I think the hardest part for her was school. And when school got canceled, I think that was a reality check for a lot of kids. Like, oh, you know, because again, they're thinking differently than we are, right? I mean, we're all freaking out. And when school got canceled, it was like, your year is done. Well, what does that mean? I can't see my friends. I can't hang out. So it's been an adjustment. And then, you know, I mean, Matt, Dan, let's be honest. This home teaching thing, thank God for teachers. Okay. Oh, yeah. This online schooling thing. I mean, everybody talks about it in college, but at least you might have some habits in place that allow you to have some study habits. You're asking high school kids all of a sudden to go online and be like, right. Yeah, I can handle this. It's been a completely different atmosphere for us to involve ourselves even more so than just coming home and saying, hey, what you got for homework? Now we're trying to go through these lessons. And I'll be honest, Mike and I talk about this. Math is not my strong suit. So she's showing me problems. I'm like, maybe you need to go online and look up that. So I have no idea.
I'm so pathetic that I have a 7-year-old, and she was asking about the short and long words, the phonics, and I had no clue.
I know, because we forget all the stuff we learned, and then like how they teach it today is completely different, and so. Yeah, man, I'm almost willing to hire like an online tutor at this point.
I will pitch in for that.
Right. And Darren and I both live in the city, and it's just, I mean, I got to be honest with you. We joked around about it. Carl knows there's no I in team, but there's a big I in Mike. And I'm loving this, you know, getting home. And now, granted, you do have to avoid those bad habits. And we've gotten better the last few weeks, Matt and Darren, at home you can snack. You can go grab a bag of pretzels, a bag of Doritos, a bottle of tequila. So again, you got to maintain discipline. But I think the key to maintaining your routine, Carl, I think would agree, starts with wearing underpants. I think on days you wear underwear, you feel that you're approaching the day with a little more seriousness than work-life devotion.
Yeah, the shaving, just the daily grooming. I mean, Darren, obviously, you look great. But I'll be honest with you, there was about 3 weeks where I just didn't give a damn. Like, I was completely in a rut, And my wife finally said, listen, you've got to snap out of this. She was like Rocky, to Apollo Creed, Apollo Creed to Rocky. You've got to snap out of this. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She goes, you haven't showered in days. You don't shave. Well, you're coming to bed. I'm like, who am I seeing?
Yeah, Darren, you can't. I mean, you got the kids, though. I mean, how tough has it been for you with the two little chitlins?
Yeah, it's been difficult. The only good thing for me is I'm up in an apartment above the garage, so it's sort of I lock myself away here. And
okay, right.
And the way we're doing it, like Matt's talking about the teaching. So Faith is my wife's the sort of main teacher, and I do the PE lessons usually late afternoon, and then weekends I get them on the weekend. So it's been fun in a way because obviously all the sports we talked about it, soccer, tennis, badminton. So it's been good in terms of doing that, but I still can't wait till we're let loose and you can go out and meet people again.
Right.
Yeah. I it's funny you say that, Carl, on the shaving thing. I shave once a week before this podcast and I shower once a week before this podcast.
Right. That's, I mean, seriously, it's like nobody's on me. Nobody's smelling me, you know? It's like, whatever. But I'll say this, Darren, with the kiddos, having this time to connect with them, like you're going to look back and this time of whether it's 3, 4, 5 months, whatever it's going to be. I mean, I know it's been like 6 weeks, but most people and most fathers, and I was talking to a buddy of mine about this, are you already pouring tequila?
No, I'm just prepping. I'm just taking it all in.
All right. But my buddies were saying that they're having more time to spend with their kids, and they normally would not have had this time. So this bonding that's going on with fathers and their sons and stuff, it's kind of really cool, although the circumstances suck. But, yeah, I hear you, Darren.
Yeah, no. Right. I told you this, I think, on the show, but every morning I get up and say, is the virus still here? And because they're just excited, it means another day that there's no school and daddy's around. So they're like,
it's funny, too, because, like, Darren and I travel a lot, and Darren travels more than me, but we traveled a lot. Right. But it is, I do think the kids are like, Dad, when's your next trip? Like, when are you leaving again? You know, it's like, why are you still here?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, again, I've got no kids because people like me shouldn't have kids. I follow that credo. But yeah, I mean, I couldn't imagine being a high school student or, you know, a senior in high school, a senior in college. I mean, you work your butt off to that moment. And I just read online today, like, you know, Cobb County's trying to come up with how do we do a virtual thing or do it in person. Because, you know, that's a big moment. And I'm not trying to get heavy on this. But I mean, yeah, there's people with kids. That's the one, especially teenage kids like Carl's got to deal with where you got to be climbing up the walls, man.
Yeah, the graduation thing, I don't know what they're going to do. And then even going back to school, like, you know, they're talking about you got to plan for September or end of August, actually. And they're saying, well, maybe now that we've done this online thing, kids can be home 2 days a week, you know. And then, well, for parents who have older kids, that's fine. But if you've got young kids, what are you doing with your kids now? When you expect them to be at school, that creates a whole nother issue for a lot of parents who now are ready to get back to work. So it's crazy, man. But you know what? We're going to get through this, and this is going to help us.
Yeah, and I think Mike's just dropped off to have a quick sifter of the tequila. Mike,
that's okay.
No, I told you I'm not IT savvy. Hold on. What's going on?
Hey, Carl and Mike, how is
off screen?
How there he is.
Sorry about
this
that.
This is the true life. This is the new normal.
Now, again, I guess the phone company is not essential business. My wife's going to go, don't tell that story. But we're
This is how it's been on the show, by the way. In the middle of a sentence. And then he calls me and he's like, blah, 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 I can't do this.
This is the new normal. And I love this. This is the realest podcast we'll ever do. Carl, how's it been? I know you had the draft and... but how's it been for you guys with no sports? How's it been? I mean, it's got to be, you know, it's got to be tough for you guys. You can talk NFL and you can talk about when things are going to start and you had the Jordan documentary, but which I would love Dusty Rhodes' opinion on that. But how has it been for you guys?
You know, yesterday, just as an example, we spent 15 minutes on an asteroid possibly hitting Earth. and we spent about 10 minutes on these declassified files that the government has released on these airplane aliens or whatever the hell they were. Here's the point. Mike and I will find something to talk about. We're those guys. But, you know, I said this today, man. A guy asked me, my neighbor actually said, when are you starting to get worried? And I don't know about Darren, but like if we get to September and we don't have games, that's a game changer for us because football season is such a big deal. And now to not have that, that's when I would really start to worry. I'll be honest, Matt, Darren, you know, we're guys that we talk about life and we talk about all these things and we'll find something to entertain our listeners with until these games come back. But to be quite honest, that's my like worrying point. Like September, where are we at?
Yeah, look, I've got the greatest admiration for you guys because, you know, I think about there was a great Monty Python sketch back in the day of the day there was no news and they cut to right. The news guy and he's like, you know, today George hit his thumb with a hammer and they sort of do it now in slow motion. Yeah. I think, you know, with you guys, how you've been able to fill the air for that amount of time is pretty impressive. But how did with the draft? I mean, it was obviously great to have an actual event to talk about. And I've just got to share and follow up on our podcast because we had a competition between Matt and myself on predicting 7 questions for the Falcons, including would they move up or not. And just so you guys know, we had 650 entries. I finished 33rd. Matt finished 324.
Hey, nice. I worked in the NFL for 12 years.
Yeah, exactly. You have the experience.
No, I mean, the draft for us was big. It gave us a lot of content, and I thought Roger Goodell, I mean, we always hit, you know, again, the guy's a human punching bag. But honestly, Darren, in answer to your query, that he did a really good job. I mean, he put a human face on it. It went without a hitch. And, you know, certainly we needed some kind of sports content. And I thought, you know, it set the right tone. You're seeing the coaches and these, you know, personnel guys just like us, regular Joes at home with their kids coming in the office, you know, guys wearing sweats. You know, I just felt it was very American, you know.
I'm sure others, you know. Outside of Cliff Kingsbury. Right.
I was going to say, Mike, yes. You look a bit like Cliff set up there. Just
oh, for God's sakes. Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Hey, no, Mike, what was your thought on I'd love to get your – I don't think I heard you. I'm sure you addressed this, you and Carl did. What was your thought on when Roger
I resent these jibes about my bachelor-style Cliff Kingsbury type.
What was your – I know you guys had to touch on it. What was your take on Roger moved from the standing and went to the chair?
Yeah, well
– looked like Roger had some brown liquor, Carl, didn't it?
Yeah, he had something going because he was like, I'm going to take a rest. But here's the deal. It was so casual and relaxed, man. It was like, well, now what are you doing? What are you doing?
You like that he tried to be like the human guy and like, I eat M&Ms too. Yeah.
Yes. I'm talking to Mike. What are you doing on your balcony?
What is Mike doing? This is great. This is the new normal. I love it so much.
I think he's frozen now.
But some people didn't like Roger taking the seat. They were like, it's so informal. I'm like, he's in his basement.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Carl, what was your thought? Darren and I talked in the last podcast on the Jordan documentary. I know you've done some NBA stuff in the past. What was your take on that?
It's been great, man. I mean, I'm so excited that we're getting a chance to hear. First of all, to hear Jordan cuss.
Yeah, okay? I know.
People like, again, and I've said this, his image and the marketing that was done, you thought this guy was just, again, like that's not a part of who he is. And you know, for those of us who at the time where I covered that last run, he talks more than anybody on the court. He's always yapping, and you'll see more of it in this documentary, but it's been great to see his side of it. And I think it gives perspective to younger people who didn't see how great Michael was, what the phenomenon was.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's been really interesting because I've obviously knew who Michael Jordan was, wasn't sort of around when he had this period. But like some of the takeaways for me, like I couldn't believe just how dedicated he is. You know, it's no accident that he got where he did. Like the shot of him talking to Rodman, you know, and sort of telling him what to do on the court, you know, just for our players even, it's amazing to show that. But then for me, like how cowardly were the Pistons? What? How can you be the baddest team and then walk off? That was unbelievable.
Well, that was going to be my follow-up question to you guys. Right. My favorite part in the documentary so far is Horace Grant wearing an NBA Cares polo and calling the Pistons
bees.
Straight up bitches.
Yeah, it was great, right? I know, man.
How did you know about like the hatred of them and Isaiah Thomas?
A little. I don't think it really became known until the Dream Team, which is actually going to be a part of this next these next two episodes, because once Isaiah got left off the Dream Team, there was, remember, this is prior to social media and all this stuff, so there wasn't all these rumors and stuff out there. Yeah. So the only way you really knew is if for guys who cover the team. And that was really one of those things that was like, yeah, they don't like each other, but you figured it had to do more with the series than it did an individual personal level. And then the Dream Team things happens. You'll see this Sunday. And that's when everybody kind of went, whoa, wait a minute.
And Mike, you got a good Charles Oakley story, right? He's featured in that documentary. He's frozen again.
Is he frozen?
He's got a great Charles Oakley story.
That's a serious pose.
Mike, rejoin.
He's got a great Charles Oakley story.
Yeah, he does. Mike, tell the story about Charles Oakley. Oh, he's on mute. Mike, you're on mute. Take your mute off. Oh, my God. I give up. All right, there you go. Tell the Charles Oakley story.
All right. I understand. Real quick, just understand. My phone is dying, and I can't get to the phone store because it's not essential. And this is what I've been dealing with. Ah! But no, years ago, there was a place, we'll call it the Gold Club. And for kids that are watching this podcast, it was kind of a petting zoo for adults. And years ago, Charles Oakley was sitting up in VIP. And as I come walking up the stairs, Oakley is wearing a corduroy, like coveralls, you know, like overalls and no shirt underneath. And grew up a Knicks fan in New York. And I go, Oak Tree, what you got, man? He's like, crab legs. I go, throw me one. And for whatever reason, not even knowing who I am, he instinctively just throws me a crab leg. And the price of those are about $25 a piece, you know, because of those kind of establishments. So I grab it. And then he realizes he doesn't know me. And he's just thrown a big part of the VIP right over to me for no reason. We sent a bottle of champagne over to him. But big guy, great guy, and a part of that team, which, you know, again, the dynamic I think we're seeing on the documentary, I know you guys talked about the Pistons, was Krause. Krause is easy to love and easy to hate. The guy was both a genius. He was the one who said, look, we got to move on. I know that Oakley is Mike's guy, but we need better presence in the paint. They go get Bill Cartwright. Rest is history. But Krause, it just seems like he wants so much of the credit. And I find that even more fascinating. I already knew the Pistons were classless punks, but I'm finding this whole Jerry Krause dynamic fascinating.
Yeah, it was amazing that he leaked that story. You know, now they're on that final sixth championship. But for him to do that at that time can only be because he's sitting there frustrated that he hasn't got the credit perhaps that he feels he deserves. And
yeah, right. Darren, and where you sit, ironically, you know, I don't want to turn this into a Tooks and Bell interview. but where you sit.
By the way, Carl, I found the good spot. I'm not moving right now. I'm just going to stay right here.
All right, don't move. But from where you sit, you've already built a championship team. You've been a guy that, listen, you don't look for credit, but we know that you're behind this thing. And the point is, as an executive like this, who's a team builder, when you do those things, you got to know that destroys chemistry with the team. And certainly, you know, like I'll use Gressel as an example. Mike and I pressed you on Gressel and you said, we're not going to talk about it. And then you made the move that you felt was necessary. And my point is, as an executive, those things, the way you go about handling those situations ultimately make either people want to stay here or come and play for us or leave.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's the interesting thing, isn't it? That you sort of make those decisions and it might be short term good for you personally, but isn't good for the franchise, which is why I was surprised that, because, you know, you think of the Chicago Bulls of this great sort of franchise, but I thought that was interesting. That he did what he did. For me, it's been fascinating. It's like anything, isn't it? When you're watching it, you think, how does it reflect to, say, Atlanta United? And for me, what was interesting, I see the Pistons as our New York Red Bulls, the way yes. that Michael Jordan felt after they'd beaten them for the first time. You know, we had that with the Red Bulls. Red Bulls were our nemesis. First game, we lost to them. You know, they did us for the Supporters Shield. And I remember that moment is definitely my top five when Tito scored that third goal. When we went 3-0 up in the first leg, and you knew then at 3-0 up, we were going to go through. And that felt like a weight off our shoulders because they were our sort of Detroit Pistons that we just couldn't, for whatever reason, get one over on them. We finally did do that.
It's a great point. Yeah, I mean, plus we don't like them.
You know? Yeah, I mean, I don't like, for to me, NYCFC and the Red Bulls, it's a push because I know I don't want to put words in Darren's mouth as an MLS executive, but, you know, Yankee Stadium is a joke. Everybody knows that they can't find a place to play up there. They're trying to get a stadium built. But to me, that's always felt like the ultimate unfair advantage, almost like, you know, a wrestling match where the referee is, it's fixed. You know, and it just seems that every time we go up to New York, it's like, wow, when we were able to get a win in the playoffs 2 years ago, to me, that was like, I felt more pressure about that than I did about the Red Bulls.
So I had a question for you guys. It's nice to be able to sort of ask you, but on Atlanta United, I'm really interested. I go back to 5 years ago when I joined the club and I'd be listening to you guys on the radio, and obviously it was Falcons, and thinking, you know, will we ever get coverage like that? Obviously NFL's the big thing. Have you guys been surprised at what happened with Atlanta United, or were you always thinking soccer was going to be successful?
All right. So for me, when I was in Houston, Houston Dynamo started, and I had, you know, at that time, Oscar De La Hoya was a part owner. They had all these celebrities that were a part of the ownership team. And the whole premise was, you know, they were trying to get as much exposure as possible. They did not have a soccer-specific stadium, the one we've been to now. That was not there. And I didn't think that it would take off at all. For 20 years, Dan, we've been having soccer conversations in America about where it is, where it's going to go, at what point it'll take off. And so you fast forward to Atlanta for me years later, and we hear we're getting a soccer team. And Mike and I talk about this. I think we knew we were on to something here when we went to that launch party. And there were hundreds of people in line to get in. And we didn't have a player. We didn't even know what the logo looked like, you know. And we're kind of like, what's going on here? So there was a buzz that was different from what I experienced previously. And then the other telling moment for me was the first game at Bobby Dodd. It's one thing to say, all right, you're going to get 25,000 people if you're lucky. Bobby Dodd was full. And I was like, holy crap. And then the next time, it was full. And that's when I started to realize this is going to be something.
Matt, I've been here, you know, as long as I've been. I remember we watched the Silverbacks play. I remember when we had the Women's League team. I mean, and you're saying, to Carl's point, like, is it going to get traction? And I just thought, you know, maybe by the demographics, how many, you know, hundreds of thousands, you know, whatever the number is, kids who grew up playing soccer in Metro Atlanta, and not to mention, you know, folks who moved here from another place. I'm admittedly, and I've told the story to Carl on the radio. I was a guy that dragged his feet on soccer. I didn't understand it. I went to the World Cup when Ireland beat Italy at the Meadowlands in '94. I didn't even know what I was watching. I was just there for a big party. But it was when I went to England and I saw Chelsea play in 07, and I said, okay, this is what it's all about. So I was excited when Atlanta United came. I was all in, regardless of what the rest of the city was going to be. But that launch party that Carl talked about at Compound, first off, the kit. We got the coolest uniform on the planet. You know, we've got, the way that Darren built this thing. You know, it's all about style. Style makes the fight. Had we gone to a plotting style built from the back to the front, we went with attacking style. We espoused the idea of going and getting a star player from Europe who's on the back end of his career. So to me, it was built perfectly. And those first couple matches at Bobby Dodd, because I live right across from Bobby Dodd off the interstate, that was awesome. Don't get me wrong. I love Mercedes-Benz. But those first few weeks at Bobby Dodd were just amazing to be there. And then you knew that this thing was going to be amazing.
Darren, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure, Tom.
How did you get Tata? How did that come about? Because as much as we're talking about the vibe in the city, you went and got a big-time manager that people went worldwide. Okay.
Hey, Carl, before he answers that, it's funny. I was in Flowery Branch when – and it was kind of like, you know, it was kind of a secret that we were looking at Tata. And I was going to the bathroom, and I came around, and Darren and Carlos were, giving someone a tour. And I was like, I went and Googled, is that Tata Martino? And then I was like, uh-oh.
That's cool. So he was already here.
He was getting busy. Shown the place, maybe.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was interesting, Carl, because as well, the perceived wisdom was foreign managers didn't work in MLS. So there'd been Ruud Gullit, there'd been a few sort of high-profile European managers that just hadn't worked out. So I think, you know, the common wisdom was you needed an American because the MLS is so different with the salary cap and the travel. But my thought was, look, in Europe, you have a sporting director that gets the players and the manager is just a coach. And, you know, that's what happens in Europe. So as long as you could put the support structure around a coach, I didn't think it was necessarily a bad thing to bring a foreign manager in. Obviously, you had to have the right support. And look, we got lucky in a sense that I got that call that said, you know, Tata had just left Argentina, he might be interested. And I was really skeptical, just didn't think it was genuine or real. But I took the call and he sounded pretty interested. It was just a quick conference call. And one of the things I learned, particularly from my time at Spurs, you know, Daniel Levy gets a hard time, but one of our strengths was we were very lean. It was basically just me and him. And if we decided on a player, we'd just go for it. And we had that ability against like a bigger club, like a Man City or even a Chelsea, where they had a longer sort of process. So I remember, I think I did the conference call Tuesday and I was flying out with Carlos on the Friday to Argentina. And it was, he's lived in Rosario, which is about a 3.5-hour, 4-hour drive from Buenos Aires. And it's the worst drive you'll ever do. I mean, I still have nightmares because you're driving and it was raining on the way back. And there's lorries just in the middle that have fallen into ditches because no one gives a stuff about the speed limit. I mean, our life was flashing before us. But we went out to see Tata and it was 2 days we spent there. And look, I'll be honest, I knew from almost minute one that he was going to be the right man for us. And it was really helpful because he played for a team called Newell's Old Boys, which is where Mauricio Pochettino played, who was the coach at Tottenham before I left. So he was the, you know, they knew each other. I was able to get a reference in that sense of, you know, to get an understanding of what Tata was like. And likewise, I think he did the same, obviously, with Maurizio. So we were able to put it together. And look, we were really fortunate because he was just perfect for us as that first coach.
There's a great picture Darren needs to send you of like some, what was it, Darren, the gas station you stopped at or whatever?
Oh, yeah. We should put it up on the
podcast.
So on the way back, so I'll quickly tell you the story. So Dario, who was the assistant coach, Dario was driving. By the way. Dario played for Dallas when the league started up. He played in Argentina. And so he starts to tell us this story. So we're driving. We stop off at this really, really ropey sort of service station environment. There's stray dogs roaming around. Carlos,
ropey.
We're up to the, we're dressed to the nines, you know, because we've been on our sort of trying to recruit Tata. So we've got our suits on and, oh, it was so grim there. And we get out of it and we feel like, cool, we dodged a bullet there. We start driving and Dario tells us this story about how about, I think it was 500 meters from the spot we stopped at, he'd got kidnapped. Like what? 10 years ago. Kidnapped. And that was the reason he went to America and played in MLS. So he's telling us this story.
Oh,
Carlos and I are like, what the? Why the hell didn't you tell us that? Like, are you mad? But yeah, he got kidnapped, stripped naked. And that was a moment for him where he felt it wasn't safe with his family. And he went to America, to the promised land, to start his career. But it's like, yeah, could have told us that before we stopped.
We'll find that photo. Darren, you have to send that. We'll put the photo up. It is
wow. Great.
Well, look, Carl, I know you guys. Go. Keep going, Mike. Go.
No, Carl, I was going to say, Darren, we could do these stories all day, but Carl knows the story. I had a similar experience in Rio de Janeiro by going on the wrong side of the tracks, trying to find a pharmacia to get some aloe for sunburn. And some street urchins came up to me, and I wound up walking back to the hotel doing the shell dance with a pizza box to cover myself. So, it can get a little funky sometimes if you don't know where you're going.
Hey, Mike, and when we were in Honduras, you know, when life was normal, Darren and I had a beer after the game, and I gave the lady my card, and she said, yeah, can I get your passport number with this?
Oh, jeez. I was like, no.
Yes, well, look.
And by the way, guys, thanks for inviting Carl and I on this, and I apologize. And by the way, I told Darren yesterday when we talked to him, you knew when we did this contest, I would be the weakest link. You knew the technology in me would be a bad combination, like Josie Altidore and his hamstring in a World Cup. Yeah.
Well, listen, we really love you guys. You guys have been so good to us. Your support, the way you talk about us, the way that, you know, you invite Darren on every week, the love you've shown for me, I cannot thank you enough. I thought our good friends at Lunazul Hey, I've never seen Darren do a shot, by the way.
Yeah, come on, let's do a toast to Jukes and Bell.
I've got my old man glass from the Vegas Pawn Stars.
Nice. Lift him up.
All right, cheers to you guys, and hopefully get back to normal soon.
Cheers.
Love you guys.
Thank you guys.
ATL.
United. Oh, that's good.
Very smooth. Very smooth.
Sharpened me up for the afternoon.
Yeah, Dan, enjoy your conference call.
Don't forget.
Yeah. I've got this great idea.
Kick your soccer on 92.9 The Game. You're home at United. Dukes and Bell. We were in from the jump. You guys know.
Nah, you're the best, man. This is a fun one. This is a really fun podcast. We'll have to do it again. And thanks for all your love. And Darren, I'll go ahead and end this one. I think this was a perfect format. So I'll see you next week, and I'll see you on the next Zoom or Teams call in a couple hours when have had tequila in our bodies.
Cheers, guys.
Yeah. Cheers.
Thanks, guys.